a very quick disclaimer before we get going. By continuing to listen to this podcast, you agree to surrender your soul upon the expiration of your mortal body to the VTech Corporation. VTech, keeping souls safe, happy, and busy. Hello, my sweet and beautiful friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And forgive me, because this is a political episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And I ask your forgiveness because I am intensely aware that many of us don't want to hear about politics at all. We're chafed, man. Once when I was a kid, my dad, his friend had a motorboat, and they tied a rope to it, and I could sit in an inner tube, and they just drove the boat around and dragged me around on this inner tube. And it was like, it was probably one of the best like 2 or 3 hours of my life. Just sitting in a fucking inner tube, getting dragged behind a boat on a lake, a beautiful day. It was wonderful. But when I got home, I realized that all around my ass, all around my legs, all the skin had just been rubbed right the fuck off. And I guess the joy of riding around in the inner tube somehow made me not feel the fact that it was actually dissolving the skin from my legs. And so for like a week, I had these crazy, like, it looked like I'd been abused. Like I had these crazy fucking scabs all over my fucking legs from this inner tube ride. And it hurt so bad. It hurt so bad. I was fucking chafed, deep chafed. And I know many of us are like that now. We're like, we've just been fucking just the constant friction of never-ending tweets, editorials, news reports, and all the other anti-Trump or pro-Trump bullshit that's been being exploded out of the glowing black horn of whatever cyclopean demon has possessed our entire society and is cursing us with every single political event that happens has made us feel pretty anti-politics right now. Or even worse, we've just become like infinitely obsessed with politics and can't stop staring at the garish freak show that used to be the American political system, and we've become shrill and we're like tweeting never-ending non-stop impotent tweets, essentially shaking our fists at a mountain. It's like you're just some lunatic who's standing in front of a volcano shaking your fist at it like, you will never be my president. And that's pretty sad and pathetic too. So I get it, man. A lot of us are chafed. We don't want to fucking hear any kind of political stuff, which is why I often hesitate when it comes to doing political podcasts or having guests on that where it's going to get political. But here is the exception, because today's guest has got to be one of the great political satirists living today. He's got to be. I'm not exaggerating. He's come up with his own style. I think in the future people are going to call it, I don't know what they'll call it, Bergarian political satire? I don't know. But I really mean it when I say I think people are going to study this guy's work in the future. And that in the future, he's going to be identified as one of the great political artists of our time, because he has innovated a way of focusing in on the absurd, apocalyptic nature of modern day politics that is a million times more powerful than writing some editorial. No matter how brilliant a writer you are, no matter how deep you understand the political system, no matter how adept you are at pulling out the unseen threads of what's happening, I don't think you can come close to doing what Berger is doing with 3 minutes of video of Donald Trump speaking and the way that he has figured out how to underline micro gestures and micro moments. It's one of the most hilarious and disturbing and beautiful forms of video art that I've ever seen. So I'm thrilled to have him on the show, and I hope that you will take the plunge into this political episode of the DTFH, but only take the plunge after you have watched some of Vic's videos. And I know I say this sometimes, like, stop it and watch this video, but I really mean it this time. Like, really, like, if, like, look up Vic Berger Jim Baker Buckets on Google and watch it, or go to DuncanTrussell.com and look at the clips that I've chosen to put in the comments section of this episode. Just do it so you get an idea who this guy is and what his art looks like. It's hilarious. It also will make you feel a little kind of uncomfortable, queasy, maybe even a little freaked out if you're super high. And that's why I love it so much, because he really has zoomed in on a specific bandwidth of what's going on that I don't even know if you could write about it. It's visual. You need to see it. So before you listen to this episode, please do me the honor of going and checking out one of the clips linked at DuncanTrussell.com and then come back and watch it, or pull up the clips and watch them while you're listening to this interview with Vic Berger. I love him. So stay tuned. We're going to jump right into this interview. But first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Casper.com. Friends, the thing you're sleeping on should not feel like it was woven from gargoyle wings. It shouldn't smell like the stinking undergunt of a titillated auntie watching a strip show in Vegas. Your mattress is an occult instrument. It is the boat that will carry you down the river of sleep into the cave of dreams. Respect it. And I know why you didn't want to get a new mattress. You didn't want to get a new mattress because you thought you were going to have to get in your car and go to a mattress warehouse. And I've been to one of these before. I've told this story before. I got, right after my mom died, I went crazy, ate some weed, thought I'd feel better if I had a $5,000, $4,000 mattress. Ended up being hypnotized by a mattress salesman who was so good. He recognized I was stoned and he took me to this vibrating mattress. He looked at me with real concern and said to me, "I'll sell this to you, but don't get addicted to it. You gotta promise me you're not gonna get addicted to this thing. Because it happened to my wife. She got addicted to this mattress." And he was fucking good, man. And I believed him. All you had to say was like, "You're selling me something I could get addicted to." It's like, yeah, I'll take it. I'll pay any amount of money for a heroin mattress. This sounds perfect. The long and short of it is, I ended up buying what essentially was like a bed for geriatrics. You know, like a hospital bed that lifted up. Like, I remember showing it to my friends and seeing the look of concern in their eyes as they realized I was legitimately and genuinely excited because I'd bought a vibrating bed. You don't need to do that. You don't need to fork over that much cash. It meant nothing. The bed wasn't that great. The mattress wasn't that great. It ended up getting all lumpy and weird. You can avoid all of this horror by going to Casper.com/family hour. Enter in offer code family hour and you will get $50 towards a brand new mattress, which you can send back if you don't like. So at least before you go get sucked into the swirling charismatic vortex of a highly trained mattress salesman who more than likely is working for the CIA, is trying to sell you a mattress filled with scanning devices that are going to be sent to the NSA and used to slowly make you go insane, you can go to Casper.com/family hour, use offer code family hour, try out a Casper mattress. They'll send you a box that's got this wonderful mattress in it. You open the box, the mattress explodes out like a volcano erupting mattresses. My God, one day when Jesus returns, we will live in a world where mattresses are launched out of volcano instead of fiery plumes of magmatic death. But I digress, friends. You'll get this beautiful box with a wonderful mattress in it. You can try it out. You can try it out, and if you don't like it, you can send it back. You get it for 100 nights. You can take your old cum-stained mattress that looks like a shroud of Turin made out of blasts of vaginal spray, put that somewhere off to the side, install your beautiful new Casper mattress, try it for as many days as you need to. If you don't like it, send it back. Go get a vibrating bed woven from whiskers plucked from the hair of a pony in Switzerland, if that's what you need. But you won't. You're going to love your Casper mattress. I sleep on a Casper mattress. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress for years, except for right now. I'm in some Airbnb sleeping on a suspicious mattress. I don't want to look at the thing. It's an Airbnb mattress. My God. My God. An Airbnb mattress in Los Angeles. God knows how many freaks have humped on this thing. It's terrifying to think about. I miss my Casper. I only advertise stuff on this show that I actually use. If you're looking for a new mattress, Casper is the way to go. Go to casper.com/family hour, enter in offer code family hour, and you will get $50 towards a beautiful brand new mattress. Designed and developed, assembled in the USA, free shipping to the US and Canada, affordable price because Casper sells directly to consumers. And the product design features a marriage between foam layers for ideal firmness. Just the right sink and just the right bounce. That means it's great for humping. It's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Thank you, Casper, for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. If you've been waking up in the middle of the night, sweating profusely and wondering, my God, how can I support the DTFH? I'm here to tell you the main ways to do it. The best way to do it is to go to patreon.com/DTFH and sign up. Subscribe and you will have access to content that does not make it to the main feed. You'll have access to opening, rambling monologues that are not attached to any interviews and also weird songs, music that I make, and just random shit that I upload there that I'm too afraid to put on the main feed. Also, for a mere $5 a month, you'll have early access to episodes of the DTFH that are commercial free. But most importantly, you will have access to the sweet, glorious feeling that comes from knowing that you are my patron, my master, that you are one of the supporters of the podcast that gets played to mummified bodies in the basement of the Vatican. Also, much thanks to those of you who continue to use our Amazon link. The next time you're going to buy something on Amazon, won't you click through that link located at duncantrussell.com? There's no need for you to actually go to some chain store to buy toilet paper and risk some ropey, mucusy spray of influenza mucus being blasted out of the inflamed nostril of a toddler, flying through the air and landing in your mouth, infecting you with influenza right before the holiday seasons. Why would you put you and your family at risk? Don't go to a chain store. Go through the Amazon link located at duncantrussell.com. Anything that you buy, they will give us a very small percentage of. It costs you nothing. Now, without further ado, friends, cover yourself in some kind of psychedelic cream because this episode is a true messianic blazer. Now, without further ado, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast the spectacular glory that is currently calling itself Vic Berger. Vic Berger, welcome to the DTFH. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Sure thing, Duncan. Good to be here.
Thanks, man. I got to tell you, is this the first time we've ever actually talked voice to voice?
Yeah, this is the first voice chat we've done, definitely.
Wow, man. I'm a huge fan. The stuff you make has brought me so many laughs, and I've shown it to so many people. I'm so addicted to your Jim Baker videos, and I think you're one of the best. I don't know what comedy. I don't know what you call. What do you call what you do? Is it satire? Is it your? What is your term?
I guess it's satire, and I mean I'm still figuring out like what it is I actually do. I mean it's kind of just repurposing found footage and using editing to comment on it.
Right.
So I don't know really what you would call it. I guess it's like satire comedy.
It's yeah. It seems and it's with when it's with you know Jim Baker. I guess I whenever I describe you to people, I describe it as apocalyptic because something about what you're zooming in on this footage that you're using makes me feel like it's the end of the world even more than sometimes I already feel like it's the end of the world.
Totally, totally. And yeah, and also I try and focus on how much of a shyster he is, you know, and, or other people that are just kind of scaring people and ripping them off and getting their money, scaring them and having them send money to them.
You're talking about Jim Baker.
Yeah. Yeah. Jim Baker. Cause he's selling all those buckets, you know?
Yeah. So can you, just for folks who don't know about Jim Baker, could you describe to them who Jim Baker is?
Sure. He was massive in the 70s and 80s. One of the top televangelists, on the planet. And he ended up going to jail in the late 80s for fraud. And there's like a whole sex scandal around it. But then so he kind of disappeared and he was out of the public eye.
Is that when he said something about God was going to strike him down if he didn't get a certain amount of money or something?
Yeah, there's something along those lines. And I think he was buying up or he was building all these apartments that like he was going to have people live in this compound. And I guess he was maybe overselling them or there's something. I don't know the exact story of it, but he was ripping people off. That's what he ended up going to jail for. So he kind of disappeared, you know, for maybe 5-6 years or so. And then all of a sudden he reinvented himself, you know, as Jim Baker again, but he's like almost in disguise because he's wearing a baseball cap and he's got this beard but then he started selling these apocalypse buckets for when the world's ending and he's building up the decline of, you know, of American civilization and it's all going to hell. And the only solution is to buy these buckets.
Yeah. And they're, and that's this, I mean, I was completely unaware of this until I saw your videos. And it's a big part of his show is like dumping out or like cooking a bucket of like this horrific looking orangey cheese and then like eating it in front of everybody. And it just looks fucking awful.
Right. To prove how tasty it is. But it's just like, a lot of people have done taste tests and it's just disgusting powdered food with a lot of salt in it, you know.
Have you ordered a bucket yet?
No, I haven't, and I probably don't want to give him any money.
I mean, but it's I almost bought a bucket. I watching your videos, I almost bought one of those fucking things. Well, I think they're collector's items. They're like Bitcoin. Yeah. Like I bet in 10 years those buckets are going to be worth a lot of money.
Right. And he pushes them as, you know, they're furniture too. You can put like 20 buckets and then put a piece of plywood over top that and put a tablecloth and you got yourself a nice dinner table.
You know? Oh yeah. And also you can shit in them. Cause that's like,
you're totally shit in them. Yeah.
That's a big way that he pitches them, man. You can shit in them. You can make a fucking bed out of them.
Right. He sells the seat that you just plop right on the bucket and then you can shit.
Which is, he points out that's going to be a big problem in the apocalypse. You know, you're going to need to shit in something.
What are you gonna do with the doo-doo, as he says? What are you gonna do with it all?
And you're like, in that moment, I mean, just, do you ever let yourself just play around with the idea of that version of the apocalypse where you have ordered a bunch of Jim Baker buckets, he was right, there's flashes in the sky, the power goes out, you look at your wife and your kids, and they look at you with this look of just pure admiration, because like... When Noah was building the ark, they were probably like, honey, are you sure? Honey, are you sure we should spend this money on these buckets? We're not going to have enough money to buy David's winter clothes if we buy these buckets. I'm telling you, we can trust him, Mary. Telling you, I got a feeling. They're looking at you like, oh, yeah, God, you saved our lives. And then, and just like, you're eating that fucking, finally you finish off one of those buckets. You've picked off bandits a couple of times who came because they knew you had those fucking buckets. Right. And now that you got an empty bucket, you're just shitting Jim Baker rice back into the bucket you took it out of. Hell.
Right. it's a good thought, but I mean, my thing is like if the world's on fire, so are the buckets. The buckets are going to catch flames too. So I mean, I don't.
Well, you're you're in a bunker, man. Like you're.
I guess if you're in a bunker, yeah.
You're in a fucking bunker, and you're like, but this is. So one of the things you do in these videos, in a lot of your videos, is it's not just like you're exploring the horror of these shysters, as you're saying, but it also there's this like focus on the people who are watching it and believing it, and that combination as you zoom in on these crowds and the people who are living this. I don't know what you call it, man. These people seem to be in a different dimension or something.
Yeah, and some of them, a lot of them have just, like, this glaze over their eyes where it is almost, like, cultish, you know, where they're just buying it and just, like, you know, eating it up, everything they have to say, and just not questioning it.
That is what terrifies me, and what I love about what you're showing us is that that level of conditioning or I don't know, what would you call it? Brainwashing or because it's not just so. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no, go on. Go ahead.
No, please.
I think it's just comes down to looking. They have the answer. You know, there's this problem that often they put out there, you know, like the world's going to end or the Democrats are taking this country into the hole. And we have to vote for Trump because he's going to guide us out, you know, out of this mess or whatever it is. So they create this problem, put it out there, and then they also offer a very simple solution. You know, like if you buy these buckets and you buy my Bibles and you buy my buckets of Bibles and you have all this and you're prepared, you're ready to go, then that problem's solved. And in the mean, you know, they're in the middle getting all the money. And I see, you know, Trump is in the same arena as that, if you want to get political, you know, because he's you know, like, say, you know, the problem with this country is all the immigration, the Mexicans. It seems like he creates this problem, he creates the enemy, but then he also offers a very simple solution of a wall, which, you know, okay, there's the wall, and then instead of money, he gets to be the president, you know. That's so it's saying, and also by being president, he does get money too because he charges the taxpayers to fund his vacations and everything else, his lavish lifestyle. But yeah, and I think that they buy that and they believe in what they have to say because they're looking for that answer and they offered that solution to them.
Well, when you're any of your Trump videos, when you're zooming in on the people standing behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Something which I think is so important because it's a kind of thing. Maybe your brain doesn't want to accept that this is happening or something. Like you ever hear that ridiculousness about how when the ships came to North America, this is probably a big pile of bullshit. Because I think I saw it on that movie, The Secret. But like, okay. So there's this ridiculous idea that like when the ships came. That because the Native indigenous people had never seen a ship before, they couldn't see a ship because their brain couldn't accept it. Like, I can remember once running into a friend of mine in Atlanta, and he came and sat down next to me, started talking to me. I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking to myself, who the fuck is this guy? Like, why is he being so forward with me? I don't know this guy. And then I realized, shit, man, that's my friend, but my brain so didn't. Wasn't able to accept that this guy was in Atlanta because he lives in New York and it just seemed impossible that I didn't see who he was. In the same way, like this shit that you're showing, the Jim Baker audience, the people at the Trump rallies, it seems so hard to understand that this is existing in the world. That in such a modern time, there's this group of people that is allowing themselves to be taken in by someone who is such a classic, obvious con artist with.
Right, right.
But you think, how did that, how? You know, have you ever thought to yourself how you would get sucked in by that?
I mean, it's hard. It's hard because I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I think when I'm making these videos, like, how is it for me and you and a lot of other people, most people, you know, would look at Trump and be like, this guy, he's been a con artist his whole life. You know, that's his thing. He's just been this, you know, like self-indulgent and loves himself more than anything. And he's a con man. He's gone bankrupt 4 times. He's not out to help you. He's out to help himself. And it's just like, how do people not know that? But then some people I talk to know that he is, that are supporters of him. They don't care. You know, they don't really care that he is conning people into voting for him or supporting him. And that's another problem too in itself. But I don't know how. I'm not really sure what the origins of it for a lot of people, like why they would be get wrapped in with that.
Do you think you're wrapped into something that you're not aware that you're wrapped into? Do you ever wonder that? Like, if it happened to them, maybe it happened to me.
That's a good question. Politically, I don't really trust, you know, anybody out there. I mean, I just got to be wary of. I don't put my whole support behind any one candidate or anything. But yeah, I mean, I think going back to my after high school, going to college, I think I was looking to get into music. You know, I was a musician, and I think the school that I wanted to go to kind of roped me in, and I think I was sold the dream there. And I'll say the school I went to, Berklee College of Music.
Okay, wow.
And they're very good at, you know, selling this dream of being a musician or a producer. School's super expensive, you know, and they really sold it to me, and I went there, and you know. Got into big debt because of that, and you know, my parents got into debt, taking loans out.
Are you still paying off those loans?
No, thankfully, I managed to, you know, in the however many 15 years or whatever, I managed to pay that off.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and my parents, I think, are still paying on it. But I that is definitely something that I would, you know, compare as being wrapped into, you know, being sold the dream.
But you know, just to stick up for musician Vic, why are you putting it in the past tense? You're like, are you, right. Aren't you still a musician?
Yeah, I am. But I don't think I needed to pay, you know, what was it, $200,000 or something like that to be who I am, you know?
Right.
Musically, I could have taken some classes or gone to schools that I even looked at that were like, you know, a quarter of the price of this school. I am still a musician though. And that's part of who I am, I guess.
You know? Do you make the sound beds for your videos?
No, not, I did for a couple, you know, years ago, but just, I have this cool, sound bank that Super Deluxe provides me.
Gotcha.
That has like tons of stock music and I use a lot of vintage stock music that's in there because it all has to be legal stuff, you know. So it's through that website that I use. But yeah, I manipulate a lot of it too.
Do you the thing you're talking about? It's not just music. I mean, it's college too, right?
This is right. I shouldn't pin it all on them. Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, the whole collegiate system these days seems a little ridiculous. Like there is this sense of like the university system itself is. I mean, I know I actually did get a lot out of my college, but what I got out of my college was not necessarily, there were a few courses I took that were life changing, but it was just one of my best professors. I went to a super liberal arts school up in Asheville, North Carolina, and you know, like the classes would be sitting out in the forest, and I was like sitting under a tree with this professor who's teaching this class called Introduction to Southeast Asia. And the whole point of the class was he would just like convince you to go to India. That was it. That was his only goal, is to just make you go to India and do whatever over there. But he started his class looking at us and saying, "What are you guys doing here? Like, you shouldn't be in college. You should be out in the world right now. You should consider dropping out of college this year and just going to India." That was his thing, man. It was real. It was real. And I remember he said, you know, because this is one of the craziest things he said. He's like, "Here's what's going to happen. Imagine you're in a car and you're accelerating down the highway and down the street and you're passing telephone poles. And the car's accelerating, and the telephone poles, they start off like you see one and then the next, and they turn into a blur." He's like, "That's what's going to happen to your years. And you're not even going to know what happened, and you're already going to be dying. So don't spend time wasting time here in college."
Like, I get that to an extent, because like like at that time, at that age, like most people don't know what they want to do, and that's why they end up going to college to try and figure that out. But like, if I could do it over, I would, you know, those first 5 years, you know, like you're saying, travel and experience more, have more life experiences, and then maybe look into finding a trade or figuring out exactly what you want to do with school, going back to school then,
or just take that $200K. Buy some fucking property somewhere,
fix it
up, get into real estate, become like rich, go through a few bankruptcies, grab some fucking pussies, and become president!
It's a simple formula. Just do it.
I want to get back to this conditioning thing, though, man. Like, because have you ever taken LSD?
I have not, no, but one day I would like to. I just somehow didn't do it. Never did it.
Your videos remind, when I was years and years and years ago, I made like pretty much one of the, well, I don't know if I want to call it an error, but if you're on LSD, probably you shouldn't watch MTV. Like, you shouldn't sit and watch TV. It's probably not the best way to spend the experience, but you can do whatever you want. But I remember sitting with a friend of mine, and we're on this like amazing LSD, and we're like, "Let's watch fucking MTV. Let's watch TV." And we're watching TV, and the stuff that seemed kind of normal from a lifetime of watching TV, you know, watching these people who are the hosts and the clothes that they've decided to wear and their affectations and the things they were pretending to be excited about and then the crazy fucking commercials and just the entirety of the thing seemed to be a kind of unholy abomination, like just a sick fly trap for idiots that was just trying to suck people into some weirdo's idea of what normal people should spend their time thinking about. And that's what your videos do for me, man, is it's like it reminds me of the absurdity of modern life, but there also feels in that, and it's hilarious, but there's something in them that really feels very sinister. Do you think we're in danger right now? Like, do you have a sense that, at least in the United States, that we're kind of nearing some kind, we're maybe brushing shoulders with something that could be really, really bad?
I think we're experiencing a pretty dark moment, but I have faith in our system and the people that this is kind of like Trump and his whole movement and everything is a reaction to, you know, 8 years of Obama, of a black president. And I think I see this as like the final push to, you know, make America great again, you know, bring all the hate and the racism and everything else. And, you know, this is like the last push for them to do to get that as the defining, you know, viewpoints in America. And I think it's failing. I think it's, you know, as you can see, he's not really, you know, legislating anything. He's not passing anything. Everything he does is an executive decision. It's just which can be erased by the next president. And I think that we're going to be pushing past that, and there will be a reaction to this, you know, coming up in 2018 and 2020. But we have to survive this. You know, we have to get through it, and we have to get through all his all the hateful things he does every day, and just, you know, try not to get distracted and try to find a way to stay positive, which I'm having trouble doing quite often. But I think this is I think they'll be good after this.
Do you? That's a very optimistic outlook, and on to be honest, I'm a little surprised. I didn't expect that. There's something almost, and maybe it's just my interpretation of these things is like completely off. I interpret things in a darker way. You know, I was just on Rogan's podcast, and we were talking about that song Daniel, Elton John's song. You know,
yeah.
And like we're talking about what songs mean, and I always thought that song was this is my brain thought that song was about his like friend who died and was being flown off in a plane to get buried somewhere. And it's about a vet coming back from the war. But like, so maybe I'm just a little sinister myself and I'm projecting it, but
I think what you're seeing, interpreting, and I think that's great. That's what art is for, you know, like songs have a lot of different meanings to different people. I think, but what you're seeing in my videos that is there, like the dread and everything, for me, that's personal stuff that where I have social anxiety, and I have a lot of anxiety when I'm talking to people or, you know, leading up to do things in my life. Where I'm hyper aware of people's, you know, affectations and if they look at me in a funny way, I can misinterpret what they're saying or what they're doing with their face. And I think that's where I'm kind of just amplifying those little moments that bother me, but I make them more for everybody, like for people that don't really have those kinds of social anxieties.
That is cool, man. That is so fucking cool, because what, like, you're seeing these micro gestures in your life, mm-hmm. which are triggering some kind of like anxiety reaction. Yeah. And because you become adept at seeing those things, you're seeing the micro gestures. Wow, that's so cool. You're seeing them in these videos you're watching underlining them. Like, look at that. Uh-huh. Look at that. Look at that. Right, what do you fucking think that is? What do you think that means?
What does that imply? Yeah, what is he? Is he telling the truth there? Or is that, you know?
Oh, my God. Exactly. That, well, see, that, not to keep going back to LSD, which I do seem to keep doing. But that's one of the things that it does, is it somehow makes you see these in-between frames in a person's expressions. So you do start seeing, I mean, this is why when you take LSD, you want to make absolutely sure the person you're taking it with, if it's a girl, you got to make sure they're not, you know, you have to almost do this Christian kind of like, all right, let's confess to each other any secrets we have, because you don't want to be like 2 or 3 hours into a psychedelic experience with someone, and then you start looking at their face and realize, oh my God, they're fucking having an affair. God, I can see it so clearly. It's so fucking crazy. You can't hide anything, you know? Yeah, and it makes you start thinking like, oh, I guess that's what telepathy is really just being able to see those micro gestures and translating them into something. But yeah, man, that's really fascinating. Social anxiety is it's a nightmare, huh?
It is. It really is. It's just, you know, I remember like going into college and like not really knowing what anxiety was, and you know, I had because it goes hand in hand with depression too. And I just, yeah, I just was always nervous around people. Like in high school, going up to high school, like I was like the prom king. I was very, you know, popular. Had a lot of ton of friends and everything. And then when I went to college, it just like hit me, and I was like, what is wrong with me? Why is it? You know, I was like nervous to like eat in front of other people and nervous just to meet new people. So it's just a bizarre thing that I still cope with, you know.
Do you take, what is that stuff? I know people who take what's it called? It like slows your heart rate down. A lot of actors take it before auditions.
I know what you're talking about. I think my dad actually takes that.
So your dad has social anxiety too?
I think it's like undiagnosed. He he kept going to the doctor because his heart was racing all the time. And they kept giving him all these like heart pills and everything that are for the heart. And then I think they snuck him this anxiety thing. And that was what did it.
Man, this is another big shocker here, Vic, because I consider what you do not only to be some of the funniest stuff I've seen, but I consider it to be some of the bravest stuff, because it's political, and right now we're dealing with a kind of like Africanized bee when we talk about the Trump supporters, right? These people are vicious, man, and they are they will swarm on you, and you have taken on like a huge amount of negative feedback from these people. How do you have simultaneously have social anxiety while like putting yourself in the position of being attacked by swarms of people who really seem kind of dangerous?
The best way is that, you know, I'm not always super eloquent when explaining myself or making arguments with people with political arguments. So I prefer to have my work more or less, you know, speak for itself. Like I can edit it the way I want and present it how I want, rather than having to get out there and say exactly what I'm saying, because it's not always super easy for me. And I find that I've never really convinced anyone, you know, I've never changed somebody's mind totally just by speaking to them. So I think if I can present it in a way where I'm using video and images and sound, it helps, you know, get my point across.
Yeah, but you're in a kind of active war with like Mike Cernovich.
That was just me, you know, dicking around on the internet last year when I was just kind of satirizing him and making fun of him with editing some of his videos and his Periscope videos. And then it turned very dark when he, you know, when he wanted to come at me. And if you want to talk about that, I don't do like the whole.
He accused you of being a pedophile.
Right.
He said your fans, you're part of a pedophile ring.
Right. I was the leader of the pedophile ring. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then that, of course, that's still lingering, you know, a year later, that I still get those accusations sent from his fans my way. It's a dark world that I've entered there.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I'm saying, is that by the type of comedy that you're doing and the subject matter that you're choosing, It's these people who are sitting in the audiences of the rooms that you're parodying. Mm. These people are like zombies, man, and they'll do anything that their masters tell them to do. And so there's an element of, you know, and this is, there's an element of risk to what you're doing. And I've always thought that's what, you know, really great comedy. Mm-hmm. Finds the place where there is danger for the comedian, and then it doesn't have to be all comedy, obviously.
Right.
And you see a lot of failed comedy, which is where the person trying to make the content thinks that they've discovered some edgy thing, whatever, and they put it out there, but it's not really, like, who cares, right? Like, I get, we already figured that out. You know, I mean, and everyone, like, I guess people are, some people are kind of into it, but, and I think Jim Carrey, I like Jim Carrey, but this new thing where he's like saying, like, we're nothing, man. Have you seen those videos?
Yeah, I've seen some of those, yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm not even standing here. I'm not standing here, man. I'm not a me, I'm an everything. And it's like this, the thing he's talking about is like, you know, has its roots in, like, Eastern Vedantism and Buddhism, and it's beautiful, but the way he's saying it is like there's this strange, like, edge, like pseudo edginess to it or something, when you could just as easily say, we're nothing. It's such a beautiful thing. Don't you see? You could put down the weight of your personality and your ego identity and merge with the universe. But he's like, he's wearing a black leather jacket. He's like, this isn't my painting. This isn't my floor. This isn't my sky. I'm just a no thing. The Jim Carrey thing. I'm a nothing. It's just, that's not, you know, that's not really putting him in any kind of real danger. It's easy. There's not, I don't think, even though it seems edgy, there doesn't seem to be a lot of risk to it. But what right. you're doing is risky because you are sticking a fucking stick into a bee's nest filled with fucking lunatics, man.
Right. But I think I've like, you know, so far succeeded in because I'm sticking with facts and I'm not, you know, putting words in their mouths or I'm just using, I'm turning their own words against them in a way with hypocrisy and, you know, just using highlighting what is what I see as bad about a lot of these people, these people, you know, in the alt-right or Trump, just sticking, you know, not, I don't know how else to say, but just, yeah, just sticking with what's truth, what I see as truth, you know?
Right. Again, that's incredibly courageous because I think a lot of people just get real nervous about the, it's kind of like with, you know, Scientology, for example, one of the sort of defense mechanisms of the super organism that is Scientology is it's like a skunk. It's like if you fuck with it or if it's afraid of you, it'll spray you down with like lawsuits, litigation, you know, and right. like, right. you know, when some of the Cernovich videos that I've watched, you know, he's like, it seems like he's kind of stopped accusing you directly. If you, that's probably because of some kind of legal thing, right?
No, I talked to some lawyers and they said I wouldn't have a case because you have to prove that he didn't actually believe what he was saying. And that's like next to impossible. And he himself has a lawyer that does these anti-slap lawsuits and just knows how to get them thrown out immediately. Like he's like a free speech lawyer that knows how to work the system. So there wasn't really anything legally I could do about what he said, but he knows how to walk the line.
It seems like Cernovich, though. I don't know. The last video I saw, he didn't seem to. He wasn't mentioning you, but
yeah.
he was saying he had like a private investigator or something.
Yeah, and that's he's talking about me. Yeah, there. But yeah, he has stopped using my name, and I think that's because, like, I worry him because just I've been successful at, you know, shutting him down and exposing him.
But that's saying, hey, I've got a private investigator. Do you think I wouldn't be surprised.
No.
You don't think he
no,
does?
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. He doesn't. I don't. I think he's just making that up.
When you go outside, you don't notice some kind of like dude in a fucking trench coat snapping right. shots of you. Of you.
Behind a bush. Yeah, just looking at me. No. You know, they're not gonna find much. I don't do a whole lot, really. You know, they're gonna see me hanging out with my kids or you know, editing videos. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, of course.
What he's gonna find.
But that's not the worrisome thing. The worrisome thing is not. I mean, it's not that they're gonna find anything. The worrisome thing is that someone has been sent from this like group or this person. And to monitor you, that's the thing that would fucking bug me. I don't want to be monitored by a Cernovich drone.
You know that.
That's
right.
But I was wondering if so this style of content that Cernovich is putting out and people like him put out, Baked Alaska. How would you define it? Because it seems like a new kind of thing. Like I've never really seen this before. I don't know what it is. It's political, but it has this like weird attempts at like comedy mixed into it. But then it also has this like strange feeling of passion behind it, as though the person creating it was like delivering some holy message to the world. And then there's this like mealy quality to the whole thing. There's this like almost an intentional mealy quality, and I include Trump in that, you know, like so how would you define this genre that seems to be new on the scene?
I think it's for a lot of these guys, for maybe most of them, it's mainly about raising their profile, getting attention, getting famous, you know, and getting a big enough following that you can turn those people, you know, to go after your enemies, but also give you money. You know, you can, a lot of these people have, you know, these, you know, Patreon accounts or whatever they are, that they're constantly giving them money for doing hateful things and for doing bad stuff. But I think ultimately it's about finding a way to rip your people off and then get more fame. Like, and that's what Trump has done. And like for Cernovich, he's evolved or devolved, however you want to say it. You know, years ago he was this men's rights activist,
right?
And then you know, that wasn't quite working out for him, wasn't getting enough money, so he evolved into this Gamergate guy, you know, part of that whole movement, which I don't totally understand, but I mean, I know he's not into video games at all, but he just kind of, you know, made himself part of that movement and managed to trick enough people into taking him seriously that his stature rose. And then Trump came along, and that's he gave rise to a lot of these guys, and
yes, you know,
endorsed them and put them into a bigger light. And I mean, you got Don Jr. endorsing Cernovich, Michael Flynn, you know, Kellyanne Conway, all these people in there. I mean, Trump, you know, retweeting that guy, that Jack Posobiec guy, and so there's just giving all these hateful people a bigger platform.
But you know, hate, the thing is, like, I guess, so okay, so when I'm picture, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of some hateful like archetype. So let's take like Darth Vader, right? This guy is fucking smart. He's evil looking. He's wearing this sleek fucking outfit. He is intelligent and focused and nefarious and destructive. And that's kind of how I always have pictured my evil people as being, you know. Mm-hmm. But here right now we're running, and again, I don't, to be honest, like, I don't even know if these people are evil. Like, I think they're misguided or something. But the stuff that they're, I guess what I'm saying is, if we, okay, the White House, you know, I don't know if he's still doing it, but for a while the White House was putting out these shitty videos. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. They're so funny. They were like, are you talking about like Trump sitting in the Oval Office speaking? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Like,
yeah. They're just so poorly made.
Yeah, they're poorly made. They look like shit. There's typos all over the fucking place.
Right.
And but sometimes I wonder, is this actually intentional? Is it, because it's kind of like the idea is, all right, it's not enough to, okay, we either need, if we're gonna get people to like us no matter who we are, and that's I guess what politics is, it's not enough to just go for the median, right? If you get the median and I get the median, then we kind of have the same amount of people, I guess, because we're going to divide the median in half, maybe, right? So that means that we either have to go for, so we need to go for the median, and then we need to go for either like things above the norm or below the norm, right? And so people, like in the past, I think politicians have wanted to scoop up great people behind them, right? I mean, that's what you would want. Like, I want my, you would want, anyone would want their fans to be like smart and cool and amazing. But it's almost as though these people have realized, like, no. Fuck those guys. Because those guys, the smart people, you got to work, man. Like, you got to actually read and know shit and be something. And, like, you know, these are, they're, the bar is set too high. But if I start going for, like, the hills have eyes, if I start going for, like, people who are, like, throwing cats into dumpster fires and laughing, then I'm going to have all of a sudden this like freakish army of like pre-apocalyptic drones who are kind of, who don't really, and to, so, but to get them, I need to show I'm one of them. And to do that, I can't spell right. I need to do some misspellings.
I think Trump wants the best. He truly does want to look the best. You know, he gets all his teeth whitened and everything, and he wants to look really, really nice. But I think the problem is he can't hire the best people because they don't want to work with him. You know, that's kind of how I see it. So he's getting people like his hats, like the Make America Great Again hats.
Yeah.
Those are the cheapest, it's like he just went online and just found like the first, hat company he could find, just typed it in and then, you know, just the cheapest thing he could get. I think he does want things to look really good for him, but he's just not able to hire, you know, good enough people to work for him. And it's just amazing that he couldn't, you know, with all the money he has and everything, that he still wasn't able to even buy those people to do it.
The picture that just came out, the one with the first lady in the White House that she decorated, there's like, I think there are like dancers in there. You know that picture?
Oh yeah. 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 That was pretty bizarre.
I'm surprised to hear how optimistic you are. And honestly, it makes me happy to hear that.
Right.
But in my worst days, when I see something like that, like the White House with like this insane Christmas decoration, that's with some lunatic standing in the middle of these, like, just the craziest shit, man, that doesn't make any sense, man. It's like, it's, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of, I think the Rothschilds or people who get accused of being in the Illuminati had some kind of crazy fucking Dadaist party. And there's like people wearing horse head masks. And I mean, it looks weird, but it looks fucking cool. It's like, whatever the fuck they were doing, that looks like a super fun party. There's something sleek and awesome about it. But like, when you look at the style you're talking about, Trump trying to look good, to me, there's something in it that reminds me of when a film starts melting in a camera and it starts bending and bleeding and burning. And it's like, this is why it's so easy for me to think maybe this is what the apocalypse looks like. Like the thing we considered to be the ultimate version of power is like having this Chernobyl style meltdown and is just spitting out like just vileness after vileness after vileness. And you know, one of the creepiest things about Chernobyl, I don't know if you know much about Chernobyl, there's a documentary I saw on it, is that when Chernobyl started melting down, all of this beautiful light started coming out of it. It was beautiful. And all these people stood on a bridge to watch this beautiful light coming out of the reactor because it was so pretty. And they're, you know, they got massively radiated. They were dead within like 70 hours. But I feel like there's something like that happening sometimes where we're all gazing, we're watching this thing with a kind of like, not like it's beautiful, but there's something beautiful in its absurd idiocy and not realizing like, wait, man, this is what it looks like when a country starts falling apart.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. And also I think like we have to find a way to cope with this too. So, you know, the humor helps, I think, and just laughing at the absurdity of it all, because it doesn't seem real a lot of the times.
Yeah. Well, exactly, man. But that's another deceptive element to it, is because it so doesn't seem real, because our brains aren't set up to accept that this can happen. Like, we're not supposed to have a tacky president. We're not supposed to have a tweeting president. We're not supposed
We want better for our elected officials. We have some standards, or at least we thought we had some standards. He just kind of melted all that away.
What we wanted is, it's like, I mean, like you were saying, I don't really trust politicians either. And, but what I do expect from my politicians is if I'm getting conned, I want my con artist to be fucking great. Like, I don't want to have that moment of stopping. Have you ever been conned before?
Maybe like, well, I mean, like some family members have, like grandparents from, you know, getting calls and, you know, to sign up for credit cards and stuff like that, that they don't want.
But you've never been like with a con per, like I remember I got conned once when I was in college or in high school. We went to this Grateful Dead show, and this fucking hippie attached himself to this group of us, and like basically like we wanted to buy acid. He got us a sheet of acid, ended up giving me way too much, and I wanted to take all this acid home, but like this hippie, like in this very proficient way, manipulated all of us so that somehow he convinced us to sell the sheet of acid he just bought for us. Yet somehow in that process, we ended up losing all our money, and he almost took my friend's car. Like, he was so good, dude. And I remember him saying to my friend, it's like towards the end of the, he's like been working on my friend. He's like identified that I was the most resistant. So he gave me a shit ton of acid so I could barely talk. Then he like identified one of my friends just didn't really care. But one of my friends, he identifies like, all right, this is the true Mark here. And because it also happened to be the friend with the car. And that's when he was really, you know, doing this Charles Manson style, like, listen, man, you don't need to go to high school, man. Trust me, you can always go back to high school. But how many times can you tour with the Dead? Let's just go, man. We'll take your car. We'll go. And like, it was amazing to watch. Thank God it didn't work. But his artistry, first of all, he looked exactly the right way that you would want your fucking con artist hippie to look. He was wearing this like psychedelic bandana. He had tie dye on. He had a beard and long fucking hair. And he was like, you know, just like a wow, crazy, true hippie man. And like, it was cool. And like, so like, at least in the con, it was,
you can
like,
appreciate the art, the form, the style that he had. And
exactly.
That he was good at.
Yes.
Yeah. Like Trump is a bad con man.
Yes. And right. So in past presidents, you know, like for example, like Obama, you know, who like killed a bunch of people with drones and exported deported more people than all American presidents combined. You've got this fucking beautiful, charismatic, wise, seemingly noble, intellectual leader, right? And I think that's sinister in its own right, because like when you're looking at him, you're like, wait a minute, though, man, you're like the NSA is monitoring us now, and like, you know what I mean? But at least you're wearing the right costume, dude.
Right. But, yeah, he's slick. He has intelligent things to say. He has, you know, like, yeah, I totally get it. Yeah.
and so this is where it's like real. This is to me where it definitely seems like it's like a meltdown. The machine is melting down because this fucking dude, his dentures are falling out.
That whole speech was a meltdown itself, too, because he started out fine, and then it just falls apart. His S's, you know, to start going downhill.
The most definite was he said. Do you how do you say?
God bless.
So
but then on top of it, they say he just had a dry mouth. That's like the official, that which makes you crazy. You know what I mean? To think that. That's all it was, a dry mouth.
Well, no, having done comedy for a while and having had some true bombs on stage, where all the your saliva is embarrassed to be in your body. So it's like trying to escape back into your salivary glands or something. It's like, I don't want to get out there, man. Fuck, this guy's bombing so bad. And your mouth dries up. And when it dries up on stage, that does it is. I mean, dentures are dry mouth. I don't really care. And I think it's funny that like the White House is like, no, not dentures, dry mouth. Right. It's like, who gives a fuck?
Nobody cares. Yeah. He's 70 something years old. Like a lot of people have them. Most people have them.
Yeah.
Like at that age.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? Like, that's the thing. Like he's just infallible to his people and his followers. Like he can do no wrong. They just have to like rework everything to rework the truth to to have him like not do anything bad. I just right. That's what drives me nuts.
But Vic, this is, and again, I don't mean to even attempt to rain on your optimism, because in my best moments, I try to be optimistic, and I truly do believe inside that everything's going to be fine. I just don't know what that everything's going to be fine is going to look like. And I think one of the things that our generation and pretty much everyone we know has going for them is that, and even people like who during the Vietnam War have going for them, even people, most just people living in the United States, as far, I don't think, I have to think about this for a second. So we had the Civil War, and then like in the World Wars, the thing is, people in this country have never experienced what it's like for a plane to fly over your neighborhood and buildings to start blowing up, right? So we don't know what war feels like over here. Like, we don't know what that's like to hear the sound of planes and then hear the shit start exploding. And wherever you are, you might be about to die. You're probably about to die. And so I think maybe in other countries, maybe they're a little bit more serious about their leaders. You know what I mean? Because
they feel it. They feel the effects firsthand.
Yeah. And you know, this son of a bitch, this guy driving the bus,
right?
You know, he could drive this bus right off the fucking cliff, man. And in India, when I did go to India, one of my friends ended up in this bus that was zooming around cliffs, and the driver, I don't know, who knows, maybe he wanted to die, who knows. And then somebody in the bus actually stood up and was like, this must stop now. And the driver stopped, and he slept for the night. And there's another thing that happened once, which is in an airplane. I don't remember this fucking plane crash where the fucking guy just locks the door, and there's recordings of the guy, them trying to kick the door in, and the pilot just flies the plane into the side of a mountain, kills everybody on the fucking plane. And they couldn't get in, like the door was locked. They couldn't even kick the door down. Right. But what I'm saying is okay, his fucking mouth got dry, his dentures didn't work. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's funny. And it is funny, and he's funny, his tweets are dumb, he's a dum-dum, oh my God, the president is such a fucking dum-dum, right? Until we attack North Korea.
Right.
And everyone's like, oh, well, they one of the weird things over here, I think people are comforting themselves in their minds, they're thinking we know we got a few more years until North Korea has developed nuclear warheads that they can put on their ICBMs. And also it's mutually assured destruction, right? Well, yeah, except fucking North Korea has VX gas that they could put on their fucking ICBMs right now and just drop nerve agents on cities in the United States, and if they wanted to. And so mutually assured destruction is a great thing, because if we have sane people on each side.
Right.
But the moment you've got somebody who's like, I don't really care, I'm 70, everybody hates me.
Yeah.
I know they hate me. I don't really fucking care. I think we can go somewhere safe. There's bunkers and shit. I don't really care. Or he's just drinking Diet Coke and his brain's all gummy and he's foggy and he's having these like adrenaline jumps, you know, from all the fucking caffeine and who knows what else, right? And that's what I'm saying, man. That's where it's like the thing that's I think the apocalypse isn't going to look like Darth Vader. I think it's going to look dumb, unsophisticated, and kind of like grumpy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sorry for that. Yeah,
no, that's I mean, I do feel that too. I guess that was just my answer for the podcast before, where I was a little more optimistic. But I'm feeling the sense of dread every day, you know. And I mean, I do have faith that you know, Bob Mueller is gonna find something, which he probably has already, and we'll start getting the Republicans on board for impeachment, because seems like he's already obstructed justice. But also, hopefully there's enough people surrounding him, which I don't really see too much evidence for, but at least maybe General Kelly will be there to, you know, make sure he doesn't press that button.
See, I like one of the things Rogan said yesterday that was so creepy is that basically, like, a guy who won a popularity contest now has access to a nuclear arsenal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and he didn't even want – he just – like, I don't think he really wanted the ability to nuke people. He just wanted to win and show up Obama. And then – so then he has to go through all these years of being president. I don't think he really wants to do the job. You know what I mean? But he may use it as a way to get back at the people that hate him, you know?
Vic, let's do some predictions. I want to hear some burger predictions. Okay, right. Let's do some predictions. All right, what do you if we had a ton of fucking money and we're at Vegas and we're gonna put some bets down? What do you see happening in the next couple of years with Trump? Does he finish his presidency?
I think the pressure is going to be building, and I think he will make it to, if the pressure doesn't build, I don't know. You know, I think he'll end up resigning before anything, but whether that's, you know, after reelection or before, I'm not sure. I don't think he'll go through with getting impeached. I think it'll get down to the wire where they start digging through his finances enough where he doesn't want that exposed, that he's, you know, not as rich as he says he is. I think that will be a big blow to him, and he will resign and hopefully try to squash that investigation.
Do you think one thing that I wonder is if there's people, and I think there are, if there's people like who work in, you know, what they call the deep state.
Right.
I think maybe there's just people in the government who recognize, like, oh, you guys don't realize you can't have a fucking guy like this driving the bus. And he's going insane. They probably know that because they're monitoring him way closer than we are. You know,
right. He's
in the fucking White House. It's basically like going to live in an MK Ultra laboratory, right? Like you're in the nexus point of all surveillance. He's being watched by other countries, probably, you know, who are like listening to his calls and shit. But they know, like, okay, we got to do something. We got to fucking do something here. I wonder if they'll like come to him at some point and say, look, here it is. The piss tape, man. Here's the thing, you know, here's the just resign. We're not going to fucking do anything. Just get.
Well, I think like once Republicans know that they can't get anything more out of him, then something like that will happen. I think because he'll pretty much sign anything and put in front of him. He doesn't really care too much about it.
Right.
So they'll, you know, once they figure out that, oh, you know, we've got all we can. We've gone as far as we can. Then I think, yeah, something like that will happen where there'll be some kind of uprising or maybe the piss tape, something along those lines. But he's dodged so many bullets as it is. I mean, I could see his supporters like getting on board with the piss tape too. So, I mean, who knows?
Well, somebody told me. Somebody told me that just what you're saying, that once the tax plan gets through, he's done. Like, that's the last thing they need from him. So, like, if they can get this crazy, whatever the tax thing is, done, then he's dead. He's dead, dead meat. That's what I've heard. And also I heard from somebody, I mean, you hear so many fucking things, but right before all this shit went down, somebody came up to me, someone was telling me, oh, no, I know these, like, really rich people, and they're telling me he's fucked. Like, he's just done. And, like, you do keep hearing things like that, but then you wonder, oh, my God, is this just, like, Huffington Post pipe dreams? Like, you know, is it just a dream? Like, and who's to say he's going to leave? Who's to say? This is, you know, I dated a girl once whose mom was in the Iranian Revolution, and when everybody had to leave, and, she, people who've been in those kinds of situations where suddenly it's just like everything just changes. They look at shit like this and they're like, you guys don't get it, man. Like, you don't get how fast this can change. Like, you don't understand. That's the problem, because you've never had it happen. But coups can happen. Things can happen, man. Like, bad fucking things can happen real quick in a blink of an eye, right? All we need is one large scale nuclear attack in any part, like smuggle in a fucking suitcase nuke, a dirty bomb, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Any of this shit. That's the only thing that has to happen. And the moment that happens, then what is going to stop Trump, or any president really, but Trump, because he's the president right now, from declaring martial law, suspending elections, arresting people in the news media for supporting terrorism? It can happen like that, man. And I don't know about you, but I'm not ready to go out in the streets and start like a civil war.
I'm not ready for that at all.
Right. And so then you kind of look at it and you realize, oh, what could happen? Like, one of the things that could happen is that actually Trump really doesn't go away. He just becomes Putin. And then the United States kind of becomes like a kind of Eastern Bloc country over time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't get rid of him. He's an oligarch and he's in there now. And it's like, he's not getting out. Good luck getting me out. What do you think? I'm going to fucking leave? Why would I leave? I'm not going to fucking leave. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to hire somebody to stage some fake attacks in different parts of the country. I'm going to rig the election. I'm going to dig my fucking heels in and get ready. Because the next fucking president, if I die, it's going to be a fucking Trump. Right. And it's going to go all the way down to Barron fucking Trump. And we're just going to have, you know what I mean? We're going to have a goddamn monarchy in the United States.
Right. It's a horrifying thought.
Run by the Trumps. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is why, man, what you're doing is so fucking important. Because in a weird way, you're the guy standing, or one of many. There's many voices out there that have a big reach. But you're one of the people standing up on the bus being like, this must stop. What the fuck is this? You got to stop. But the difference between you and that guy on the bus in India is that on the bus that we're in right now, there's people who are like, no, he's fine.
Right, right.
We've never had a better driver. Yeah, speed up. Look at the fucking, this is great. This is great to go this fast. Right? And they're like, sit down, burger. And so I don't know. I think what you're doing is actually one of the coolest forms of political protest I've ever seen, man. It's just beautiful.
Nice. Thank you.
Vic, thank you for being on this show, man. And can you tell people how to find you, please?
Yes. You can go on Twitter. It's Vic Berger 4 IV. Also, my Facebook page, Vic Berger 4, that's Berger with an E. And a lot of my videos are on Super Deluxe.
What are you working on right now?
Right now, putting together an album of songs from the past like 15 years. Flannelgraph Records is going to be putting that out.
Cool.
And also working on a TV show. So that's in the works right now.
Are you working with Heidecker's company?
Yeah, with Absolutely, yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so that's in the works, and hopefully that's going to happen.
How's it looking?
Pretty good. Just have to work on the budget and everything, a number of things to get it together and get them to approve it. Should be good to go.
Beautiful. Vic Berger, God bless you, man. Thanks for being on the show. I hope you'll come back.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Later. That was Vic Berger, everybody. Follow him on Twitter. Follow him on Instagram. All the links you need to get to Mr. Berger will be in the comments section of this episode. Much thanks to Casper for sponsoring this episode. Remember, go to casper.com/family hour, enter an offer code family hour. You're going to get $50 off of a brand new mattress, honeys. And also, if you love the DTFH, why not become my patron? I'll worship you. You can comb my hair in the bathtub. At least we can pretend that's what's happening. But most importantly, you'll be supporting the podcast that Lord Gornon Hawk from the Fifth Circle of Hell has called The Exploding Sonic Glory of a New Sun Rising from a Volcano of Truth. Why wouldn't you want to be part of that exploding glory? I hope you'll consider patreon.com/DTFH. If you like us, won't you subscribe to this podcast? And if this is your first time listening, welcome. Go back and listen to some old episodes. I hope you will. I love you guys. I'll see you in a few days with an amazing episode with author Stephen Kotler. Until then, God bless you, and may the light of God erupt from your eyeballs at night, searing through the meaty window shades of your eyelids and burning a hole through your ceiling, exploding out of the roof of your house, connecting with the moon and downloading all of the moon data into the core of your brain, turning you into a flying glory hound and allowing you to ascend to sit at the feet of God, where she sits on her throne in heaven. I love you guys. I'll see you soon. Hare Krishna.